I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. President Trump calls the media the enemy of the American people. But what does that unwanted title mean for journalists and journalism itself moving forward? Today, the media critics are in to answer that question and whether there is a successful approach for covering our latest commander-in-chief. Then we'll shift focus to how race factors into the world of reporting. Is it ethical or even legal for a news outlet to assign reporters based on their race? There's one lawsuit over this very issue underway in the Metro, but should there be more? We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Donald Trump has taken to calling the media the enemy of the American people these days, and that raises questions. What does an attack like that from the sitting president of the United States, no less, mean for journalists, some of whom have expressed concern that it was the equivalent of declaring open season on their profession? And what does it mean for the business of journalism? Our media critics will discuss that, as well as a new issue which involves journalists of color being asked to cover stories based on their race. A reporter for KSHB-TV here in town is suing the station over that very issue. Our media critics once again are Derek Donovan. He was a longtime readers representative for The Star, who now serves on the paper's editorial board, as do I. And Derek, nice to have you.
Good morning.
Peggy Lowe is the investigations editor for Harvest Public Media, based here at KCUR. Peggy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
And Pam Fine is back. She's the night chair for news, leadership, and community, and a professor of journalism over at the University of Kansas. Pam, thanks for coming over.
Thank you, Steve.
So President Trump tweeted this not too long ago, the fake news media, and he was referring to the failing New York Times, NBC News, ABC, CBS, CNN, it's all in his tweet, is not my enemy, it's the enemy of the American people. He later tried to walk that back a bit, but Pam Fine, what do you make of it?
Well, I think that he had to go on the attack to find a villain to take people's mind off the serious issues that we all should be concentrating on, and that by vilifying the press, he can distract the public and also blame the media for some of the failings or the untruths that his own administration is promulgating.
Peggy?
I would agree with Pam. I think that, attacking the messenger here is his way of getting out of a lot of the controversy, especially the Russian hacking scandal that continues to unfold. I think that this is a president that we have obviously learned during the campaign and now who believes in conspiracy theories. You know, he doesn't believe in climate change, for instance, and now he does want to make us the villain and turn his many followers against what is being accurately reported.
You know, Derek, but you still wonder, journalists already have the credibility of used car salespeople, as you well know. Is President Trump somehow adding to that lack of credibility when he comes out as forcefully as he has in recent weeks?
You know, I really think that we've got two different types of media consumers in the nation. We've got the people who have bought into the alternative media that's been built up over the past 40 years, this huge apparatus, and really just reflexively say they don't believe absolutely anything that anybody that's trying to come down the middle at, or even maybe not at the middle, but trying to present to them in sort of the institutional way. And then you've got this apparatus, as I said, that goes back to particularly Rush Limbaugh is, I think, where you have to really look at the buildup of it. And then Fox News, which is a lot of the time reporting news in a responsible way, but let's face it, it was created in response to the Clinton, to the Bill Clinton years. Mm-hmm. And it's now gotten to the point where we've got Breitbart, which is kind of one of the leading lights there, and that is where Trump's chief strategist Steve Bannon came from, that is pushing this further and further towards the fringes. And I do think that a lot of us in the, quote, mainstream media have kind of lost those viewers And they've got something that really just kind of supplies a constant stream of what they've been wanting.
So for some people, it does hurt the credibility of the news media when the president of the United States takes us on the way he has.
To a certain degree, but I don't think there's any way we're ever going to get those people back. I think he's just giving them the most public voice they've ever gotten. I don't think Americans are stupid in the least. And I think a lot of people who have been sort of on the fence, this is going to be the thing that's going to kind of push them over the edge and realize, ugh, that stuff over there on those fringes is really a lot more irresponsible than I realized.
Pam Fine, how much do you worry about this from your perch at KU, where you can oversee the media kingdom across the country? Again, when you have the president taking us on like this, does it worry you a little bit?
Yes, it worries me a lot, because the sanctity of our democracy is dependent on people's trust of information that comes from credible sources to make good decisions. And if they don't have faith in the Fourth Estate, the news media, then they're going to listen to other sources who may not have the standards that good journalistic practices use to vet and verify and, use professional practices to try to get good information before the public.
So as we sit here on this 10th day of March in 2017, how much faith do Americans tend to have in the news media? What do we know about that these days based on polls, based on anecdotes? What are you hearing?
Well, the trust in the news media has continued to ebb over the years.
It ain't getting better.
No, it ain't getting better. And the latest polls by Pew show that mistrust of the mainstream media is greater among Republicans and Democrats. But it's still, you know, about 50% of people say they think they can trust their national and local news media. But I will say that, even with that, people are tuning in. So while the trust factor or the skepticism or, in worst cases, cynicism about the news media is out there, and there's, it's valuable to be healthily skeptical. But anyway, my point is that a lot of people are consuming news from a variety of sources, maybe coming through Facebook, maybe coming through other channels. But young people especially are very engaged in getting news. And I think that if we continue to be a people who monitor a variety of sources for coverage, then we'll maintain, the idea that we need good information to make decisions.
Now, Peggy, I want to ask you about how unsettling this is for you. You know, even though people are consuming the news, this notion that we can't regain their trust or we're struggling with that, I want to get your thought about that. But first, I want to invite our listeners in here. When the president of this country calls out the news media as the enemy of the American people, what does that do to your perception of reporters and editors and journalists of all stripes? Give us a shout. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. Peggy, what do you think? How concerned are you about our own credibility?
I'm very concerned. That said, I believe that what's been happening with Trump's campaign and now with his presidency is it's given the media kind of a necessary kick in the pants. I think we've gone back to some really old school things that we've always done really well. For instance, fact checking. I'll give you an example. So Trump was tweeting about all this alleged voter fraud, which is false. So I did a piece about Kris Kobach, because Kris Kobach is the Kansas Secretary of State and Trump's source on much of this false information. Mm-hmm. And basically we, put back out, okay, here's 8 things you need to know about Kris Kobach, because he's the source of this. So we're going back and doing that old school stuff about being transparent and fact checking and just doing what we've always done. I will never say that I am part of the opposition party. I don't care what President Trump says. We are journalists who have always done our job, and we will continue to do our job to the best of our abilities.
Okay. 816-235-2888 is the number here. Let's go to Michael from Kansas City, Missouri, who wants to talk about certification for journalists. Michael, good morning.
Hi, Steve. This is a great discussion, and I really want to sort of almost endorse that last comment, which basically is that this is giving everyone a kick in the pants in terms of being engaged, understanding our responsibilities as being a citizen, and also being a journalist. And my comment really is that I think it's time for us to elevate the credentials of journalism. I realize that there are free speech issues here, but I think that the industry itself should say a journalist must know these skills. And if they don't know these skills, they can't call themselves a journalist. They should call themselves an entertainer, like Rush Limbaugh calls himself. Right now, we have a conflagration of entertainers, opinion people, and journalists. And we need to have a way to really basically authorize individuals who are in that fourth estate, understand their responsibility as journalists, and have the skills to carry out those responsibilities. And that means having a certification or some sort of, and it's not a government certification, I would say it's an industry certification.
Right.
To recognize that skill.
Michael, I really appreciate your comments. And just hang on here for a moment for us. Pam Fine, you and I are engaged in a similar business, which is educating young journalists. And to Michael's point, arguably, a degree from an accredited university, which most, not all, rank-and-file journalists in this country have, at least in the mainstream media, might get to Michael's point a little bit.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think the mainstream media looks for employees, journalists, who do practice what is, you know, considered conventionally good. I don't think we're going to get to a certification, or frankly, I don't think we should. I think the burden is going to be on the public to be news literate and to be able to distinguish between entertainers and journalists and between fake news and real news. I think the important thing we could do is support civic education and news literacy so that we help people become more discerning about the information they're getting.
What do we know about that, Derek? Do most consumers out there, can they distinguish between the real stuff and the fake stuff, or how big of a problem do we have?
I think it's a bigger problem than a lot of people realize.
Wow.
I've got a wonderful member of my family who's an extremely intelligent professional who came to me several months ago and just asked, how do I know what I find in my Facebook feed is real or not? And, you know, if she is having trouble, this is an extremely accomplished woman. If she can't trust what she finds in Facebook, that's an issue. And this is one of the things that I'm hammering on more and more. A lot of this problem is Facebook's and Google's fault. I wrote a column a few weeks ago where I was noting that I was trying to find something out about a food ingredient I never heard before. I go to Google, I plug it in. The third hit that I got is to a website that is run by a guy who has been shut down by the federal government multiple times for fraudulent claims. The third hit on Google, man, that is an issue of technology. Mm-hmm. Google and Facebook are media companies, whether they want to admit it or not.
I thought Facebook was trying to address this. You read about their attack on fake news and trying to rid fake news from their feed.
They are, yeah. Some people are seeing something that is popping up in their feeds now that's asking them to help rank the validity of a source, and you are now seeing a disputed tag on some of them, and that's great. That is a start. But one of the things that's a little bit dispiriting is if you go look at some of the lists out there of the top liberal and conservative blogs, for example, there is some nutty, nutty stuff that's in the top 10 of both sides of the coin. So, you know, this is just something that unfortunately people want this hidden news. That's just kind of built into the human condition. You want to know the big secret that everybody has, and now it's easy to cater to that.
Michael, thanks for your good call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Colin from Overland Park. Colin, you're on the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, talking about how the president recently has said, you know, mainstream media is the enemy of the American people. You know, the last thing that we heard just, you know, last week or two was he said that the Obama administration, the President of the United States said the Obama administration had been wiretapping him during the election process with no substantial evidence whatsoever. How can you call mainstream media who, you know, for a good part has evidence to back up, you know, a majority of their stories, but you yourself as a president can't provide substance or facts to half the things that are coming out of your mouth? I mean, if the media is the enemy of the people because he says that there's no information to back up the stories, and what are you, Mr. President?
Well, I don't think anyone on this panel is going to disagree a whole lot, Colin. Anybody want to weigh in there, Peggy?
Yeah, I think, Colin, you know, we saw that President Trump was a conspiracy theorist campaigner, and that's really by questioning President Obama's birth, you know, and his citizenship. That's how he rose to fame. And we continue to see...
He continued with that for years, by
the
way.
Yeah, he did. And we continue to see that happening now. I think that... we have to check out all those claims. But I also think that it's up to media to set the agenda more often and write the kind of stories that people actually need to be concerned about. For instance, the Russian hacking. So,
and also don't forget what the studies are showing us and certainly what I'm hearing anecdotally all the time. You know, you've got a significant, I think, majority of the population who doesn't approve of him anyway. And then you've got a whole lot of people who don't agree with anything about the way he presents himself, but are willing to sort of grit their teeth and bear it because they want some of the policy changes that he's going to bring about.
Right, exactly. But, you know, I will say, too, I thought it was really interesting that a Democrat from California this week actually went public with thoughts of, does this president understand reality and fiction? And that perhaps that should be talked about.
Yeah. Colin, I appreciate the phone call.
Thank you for having me.
You know, there's still this mystery in my mind politically where, you know, this president makes these claims and there's still a sizable chunk of the population that stands behind him, even though, as Colin pointed out, Peggy, as you're pointing out, a lot of what the president has said can't be verified. How do you account for that? I mean, that's a new twist in our democracy. At least it seems to me in the past when presidents made disqualifying comments, if you will, it hurt them and hurt them badly. And it doesn't seem to have the same impact here. How do you explain that?
I think we're living in an internet age that we just have not had before.
This is a first, then, you're saying.
Well, I think that it is in a lot of ways kind of a culmination, and it's been really accelerated over the past 5-6 years in my mind, where the conspiracy type stuff has gotten to a prominence that it just hasn't had before. You know, even if you look at some of the main sites and Facebook personalities that have been promoting Trump, Matt Drudge is a really good example. Drudge has shifted into overdrive in ramping up the really wacky stuff in a way that even he did not do 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, part of that also is the conservative frustration over Obama. And it seems like every new presidential administration, everybody acts like derangement syndrome is a new thing. You know, well, I remember people being deranged at every president of my adult life. I do think that the internet has amplified it over Obama and Trump in a way that I haven't seen before, or feels different at least.
Let's go to Rex from Raytown. Rex, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to let you know that I really depend on NPR for legitimate news. My complaint is that the network media for years has never refuted some of these outrageous claims. And one of the first ones I can think of was the fast boat claims during John Kerry's presidential campaign. They were outrageous. They were lies. And they were never refuted by the network media. You know, I think they probably first came on the air with Fox and NBC, CBS, and ABC just said, well, this is what they're saying, but they never say it's a lie. They never come up with the actual facts.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Rex.
Yeah.
It does seem to me that in this new era, the media is a lot quicker to use the word lie. And we've seen the word lie in headlines in the New York Times. We've seen them in other publications. That's a new thing, particularly when it comes to the president of the United States.
Yeah, I think the news media has become more emboldened and has strengthened its efforts to call BS on things that aren't accurate.
Do you like this new trend?
Yes, I think the public does too. One of the points I wanted to make is that, you know, a lot of news organizations like the Times, like the Post, are seeing an increase in interest in watchdog reporting from their readers, and in subscription sales are going up. So that
this campaign ad is accurate, this campaign ad is completely false. People want to hear that's what you're saying, point blank. They don't want dithering around anymore.
Yeah. And I think that what the editors are saying is it's our responsibility to hold these political leaders accountable. And the way we have to do that is to do significant fact-finding and show the readers, the viewers, what's truthful, what's not, and call things falsehoods or lies. The nomenclature's, not quite settled yet. Dean Baquet from the New York Times says, a lie has to be intentional. The Washington Post isn't using the word lie. They don't want to try to read into what is in the mind of the person offering the information, but they are saying what's true and what's not true.
You know, as someone who has toiled in this vineyard myself, Peggy, for a lot of years, calling something accurate, calling something highly misleading, that's a lot of work.
Those
30-second TV ads, there's a little bit of truth, there's a little bit of falsehood, and you're trying to navigate down this murky road. It's not easy.
It's not easy. It takes space in the paper.
Readers and listeners think it might be, but it ain't.
It's not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to do a lot of research, a lot of reporting. It takes up a lot of space, white space in a paper. It takes up a lot of time on a radio piece. I will say, though, that it is becoming more and more a part of what we do. And as Pam said, journalists are becoming emboldened, but so are people. For instance, there's this great new thing that happened this morning. I found it on Twitter. So ProPublica is asking people to send their congressmen and congresswomen's emails and statements to them, and they will fact check them. First up, Roy Blunt of Missouri. And he said something about Obamacare, and a reader didn't think it was quite right. She sends it to ProPublica, and they did a fact check on that email. Mm-hmm. I think that's cool, and I think it's great when the electorate is emboldened enough to ask for that.
And I'd love to see local newspapers and news organizations do that as well.
I want to get to one more phone call before a break here. This is Cynthia from Overland Park. Cynthia, you're on Up to Date with our media critics. Good morning.
Good morning. Do you think that Donald Trump's runaway train of lack of credibility could have been stopped had the media challenged him from the very beginning, as opposed to regarding him as a joke?
Huh.
Great question.
It
is a great question.
Yeah, I think
tough
can't,
question.
Yeah, it is a very tough question. I can't predict the future, but the appeal of Trump basically lay in his willingness to flout these norms that have been kind of the rule book for our politics for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He is the first one who's been willing to just kind of smash it all up and be this outsized personality that I certainly haven't seen in my lifetime on the national level. We've certainly seen the Rob Fords and these colorful characters, but I think that it was kind of a calculated thing that he was using his celebrity and his willingness to use the nicknames and all that kind of stuff. I do not think that the appeal that has to voters is something that, quite frankly, the traditional polite news media was going to be able to stave off.
Mm-hmm.
And he just happened to get I think personally, the majority of Republicans who don't like it to go along with it just to keep Hillary out of the White House.
We're talking about President Trump, coverage of President Trump and his comment a few weeks ago that the media is the enemy of the American people. A new question on the table. How fair do you think coverage of President Trump has been since he took office in January? Our number again, 816-235-2888. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll tackle all of this and we'll answer the question, does the president have a right to be frustrated with the reporting he's received since he became president? I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. I should point to some breaking news this hour. There's been a development this morning in one other story we followed this week. University of Missouri System President Moon Choi has announced he's ending a performance incentive program for executives at the four-campus UM system that includes UMKC. Earlier this week, Missouri State Auditor Nicole Galloway released a report criticizing the incentive payments as unconstitutional. According to that report, over the past 3 years, more than $800,000 in performance incentives have been paid out to top university executives. More on that later on today on KCUR.org. Well, our media critics are in the house. We're talking about coverage of President Donald Trump. The critics, once again, Derek Donovan from The Star, Peggy Lowe from KCUR, and KU's Pam Fine. Gang, how about this notion of the president? Does he have a right to be frustrated with the reporting he's received since he became president? Peggy, what do you think?
No. Not at all. And he's probably one of the top viewers of this media. From all reports, he's got the TV on all day long.
All day long.
He is live tweeting about the reports that he sees. And he's very much in the mix. He doesn't get to be frustrated. I think it's really interesting how his handlers are sort of not handling him and having a hard time handling him. And now this week, for instance, they canceled availabilities that he was to have. So he's kind of staying out of the mix. And then his people aren't really backing up what he said, for instance, about the Obama wiretapping thing. So no, I don't think he's president of the United States. We get to talk about him.
And Pam, not to be forgotten here, he certainly couldn't claim with any justification that the media somehow undermined him during the Republican presidential race because of all that free media he got back in those days.
Yeah. Well, and that may be the difference between being president and being a candidate. He has less control of the narrative now than he did then. I mean, now people are holding him accountable for what's actually happening, and they are taking him seriously. And, you know, frustration, I'm sure, comes with that job as it does for any leader.
There is a point of view, though, that I think that a lot of Trump's critics need to really think about. There was a fantastic interview in The Intercept yesterday with Masha Gessen, who is a Russian-American journalist and dissident, a strong critic of Putin. And she's warning those critics not to go overboard and accept absolutely everything that, for example, might support these murky Russian connections, because she was saying that is the way that propaganda gets spread on all sides. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's saying if you are overly accepting of something that validates your worldview, you're going to miss the forest for the trees. I really urge everybody to look it up. It's one of the best things I've read.
You know, Dirk, it's been suggested, in fact, the New York Times, the new media writer there, did a piece on this not long ago, that the media actually needs a new strategy to cover this president. I'm wondering if you think that's the case, because, you know, I'm not convinced we do. We cover what he says, we write stories, we do our broadcasts, we apply good, solid journalistic standards of fairness, and sort of away we go here. Or is it more complicated than that?
Well, the whole media landscape has gotten so complicated. You know, I think that one of the things about people who listen to NPR and people who read newspapers is they're a different kind of news consumer, really. Whereas particularly Fox News and MSNBC is really kind of news entertainment. And especially when you're talking about in the primetime hours. And to really take seriously what some of those folks are saying, I think back on when I was growing up in the 80s, my parents always had Crossfire on CNN. You know, it was kind of that was the model for where we've evolved to. That was actually substantive discussion back then. And it was actual liberals and actual conservatives, as opposed to what you see on a lot of those shows today, are sort of straw men or kind of caricatures of some of those points of view. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that flashy production value stuff that has cropped up in the past 15, 20 years, it is tough for me to watch. And even if I kind of agree with what the people are saying, I'm sort of at the same time in the back of my head, I'm like, this is kind of propaganda, you know.
Pam Fine, do you think a new strategy is needed? I'm not sure I heard an answer from my esteemed colleague here, Derek Donovan.
Yeah, I think Jim Rutenberg, the critic's, one of his points was that we need to pay more attention to the middle of the country, not just the coast. And that, you know, there's an echo chamber that occurs when people just cover the same things.
Right.
So Peggy made the comment earlier in this session that we need to, as a news media, report on stories that might be undercovered or not getting any attention. And so she used the phrase setting the agenda. I do think there's an important role in us getting outside of what, you know, those halls of power into communities and into regions where real people live and act, and we can tap into their interests and concerns.
Peggy, what do you think? New strategy for covering a president or not really?
I'm old school. I would always go back to what we've done and what we've done well. That said, I think, as Pam just suggested, we need to put a lot more people in the middle of the country to reflect what people are actually talking about. I think both coasts miss the fact that all of us big square states out here in the middle have been, you know, hard up economically.
Right.
They're losing jobs. They're losing wealth. And so that was a big surprise then when Trump rose to power. So I just think we should go back to our old school values, which are put bodies out in the Midwest, you know, set up bureaus. All the nationals should have bureaus here.
Well, it sounds simple, but it shouldn't be lost on anybody that for a long time, the news media, Pam, revenue has been going south, not going north. And so many media outlets in the mainstream world continue to be hurting out there.
Well, that's true, Steve. But then you have to look for other ways to get information to people. And that's through partnerships, collaborations, citizen journalists. I mean, there are ways that the news media can, tee up and get information that may not cost as much money as spending dollars on placing a reporter in a particular locale.
So a little more innovation might be it might be time for that.
Yes.
Okay. Back to some calls as we talk about coverage of President Donald Trump. Hal from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to talk to you.
You
always
bet.
A great show.
Thank you.
My question is perhaps broad, but I'll narrow it a little bit. You know, back in the 70s with Watergate and their expose of the Nixon administration, my recollection is that the people were extremely confident in media. And the questions regarding credibility didn't exist. Today, I'd like some commentary from your guest as to, and maybe I've heard that in part, how is it that we had such great confidence in the media for so many years, and today there seems to be this lack of it? I'll offer the view that it stems from, as you just indicated, the decline of newspapers, the smaller newspaper. The Star, for example, used to cover Kansas City, Kansas extensively
right.
in their metropolitan section. And today, Kansas City, Kansas has virtually no newspaper. There's no way for an elected official to really get his information out except by Facebook, the digital so forth. What does explain it? Is it digital news media and the proliferation
yeah.
of that, or is it Derek, is there something different about the journalists today that
has contributed to the as decreasing public confidence? What's changed to cause that, Derek?
Let me not sidestep your question this time like a politician, Steve.
Yeah.
You know, I think the big thing you have to remember is that when you're talking about the Watergate era, most consumers got their news from three news television stations and from generally one dominant newspaper in their city. And part of what has enabled Trump to rise to power is our culture has fragmented in a way over the past 45 years that nobody could foresee back then. And, you know, everybody was kind of on the same page because we all had kind of these shared experiences in media that you don't have to rely on any longer. And, of course, there's tons of people who still pay attention to the major networks. But there's also, you know, now three major 24-hour news networks and more of them coming. And so we just don't have those shared experiences. And, again, I think that's part of what's behind Trump is the fact that people long for that simpler day. Now, in a lot of ways, though, things were a lot more unified back then, and we didn't have as much diversity of point of view. And so I think that this is really democracy's great question, is how we go forward when everybody, as I've always said, can choose their own adventure when it comes to getting your news.
Anything else?
Well, I wouldn't romanticize that period of Watergate because if you remember, Punch Sulzberger and Katharine Graham, they had to fight like heck to you know, publish the Pentagon Papers and to thwart the government. And there was a lot of pushback from the administration and others in the public about the coverage of Pentagon Papers and Watergate and the war in Vietnam. People didn't like that coverage. So I think that the experts say that the decline in trust mirrors the decline in trust of our institutions overall and a decline in trust of our government, educational systems, some of the pillars of society, and, you know, which is causing which, I'm not sure.
There's a fascinating op-ed in the Washington Post, I think it was early this week, that illustrated exactly what you're saying in graphs where you see what people's trust in, for example, public education and all sorts of these institutions that we've built our culture on.
Yeah. Let's go back to some calls here as we talk about coverage of Donald Trump. Our media critics are in the house here. Andy from Blue Springs. Andy, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. The big thing I notice on your coverage of Trump is you come out now and state that he is lying. You never explain how you're fact-checking those lies. I've yet to hear any of you explain what steps you've taken to fact-check your claim that Trump is lying. I hear it all the time on other subjects, but in Trump, it's been particularly prominent.
Okay, Peggy.
May I ask a question of
yes.
Andy? When you say you, are you referring to like television news, or where do you get your
television
source of news?
I generally listen to NPR a lot. Kraske is particularly bad about this when it comes to climate change. But on the Trump coverage, I mean, I listen all the time. For example, you said Trump's claim today, you said that his claim about voter fraud was false. Well, how'd you fact check it? You okay. talked about Chris Kobach. That's one guy.
Right.
Right. From what I understand about fact-checking, which I do quite often, and of course what you're hearing on NPR is the, you know, they have, say, 30 seconds. They can't back up and say, okay, we check this, 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 and this. But what we do is we check with experts. We tend to get, like, at least five sources of experts who say the, you know, the amount of voter fraud is negligent. We go to the sources. We check with secretaries of states. We just go out and do old-fashioned shoe leather reporting, which is pretty boring on the air, quite frankly. So, mm-hmm. yeah, they do the shorthand. That said, if you really do want to know, go online, because we do put that online, and NPR puts that online, and you would have more time and a lot more references right there, Andy, to be able to know how
Derek
to
Donovan,
do this.
Hop in here.
Go ahead, Andy.
Well, checking on voter fraud, I wouldn't have asked a Democratic source, for example, which
well, no,
seems
we
to
don't
be
do
your
that.
Basic source.
No. Andy, we ask bipartisan sources.
The ranking member is not a bipartisan source, for example. But
the ranking member
what I
of
hear,
what?
And I'm sorry, it's a different subject. What I would expect to see for voter fraud is for you to go to a precinct or a random sample of precincts and say, how many voters did you have and what was your percentage of this and that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just looking at that percentage
and we
will
do
give
do
you
that
some
too.
Evidence.
Yeah, with local
and hang on, Derek Donovan, I'll hop in here.
Well, yeah. Andy, this is one of the places where I think sometimes reporters' knowledge about their beats maybe sometimes gets in the way of their explaining how they came to their conclusions. Because when you've been following a topic for a long time, you've built up so much knowledge about it that realizing that maybe we need to explain a little bit more clearly that there are election commissions around this country that are very scrupulously non-political, and they take extremely seriously the process of gathering votes in an accurate manner. And this is just kind of what they do. And reporters who've been part of this, and I mean, you can go down to your local election place mm-hmm. and watch the way that they gather those ballots. It's just one of those things that it would require such an immense, vast conspiracy of people in order to twist it one way. One of my best friends used to work for a voting machine company, and during the 2000 election, she just laughed her head off at the idea that one person could turn a switch and flip an election.
Right.
There's just so many moving pieces, but explaining that maybe is something journalists haven't done well enough.
Andy, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's go to Rick from Mission. Rick, you're on Up to Date.
Yeah, thanks for the discussion. We could probably talk about this from now until this time tomorrow.
But we're not going to, though, Rick. At noon, this program's going to end.
I know, yeah. You guys want to do something else. It's more fun. I actually disagree directly with the last guy. I think the media, major media, actually does too much fact-checking for things that are obviously false. You don't have to call them a lie, but Trump comes out every third day and says something that's basically the equivalent of that man never landed on the moon. Mm-hmm. And so then the major media spends two or three days fact-checking something that is obviously false. Say that it's false. Report it. You have to report on him. He is the president. You have to say what he said. But say that it's false. What would Cronkite have done? What would Edward R. Murrow right. have done? And what would the BBC do right now? When something is false, they say, this is false, and they move on to the next thing. And we don't spend, you know, days discussing something if the major media had done its job, why do one-third of Americans think that Obamacare and ACA are not the same thing?
Right.
Yeah.
That's
Rick,
the problem.
I appreciate it, Rick.
Exactly.
Are so
exactly.
poorly informed.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Joe. I'm sorry. I just hit the – Joe, I apologize. I just hit the wrong button here. Let's go to Cassandra from Kansas City, Missouri. Cassandra.
Hello, and thank you for taking me. This is a very fascinating discussion.
Good.
I just want to say that I think all of this fact-checking, lies, fake news media, it's all a disguise because there's things going on underhand that is not being reported accurately enough, like the secretary going over and having talks with Korea, and no media is, going. Mm-hmm. And also that, you can't cherry pick who you want to sit into the press when you're given your speeches, because you're only going to say who's favorable. Well, that's not how the real world works. And right. So I think there's some underhanded things going on that we really need to call attention to. And I'm like the other gentleman, a lie is a lie is a lie, or excuse me, alternative facts.
All right.
Just state it and just move on.
Okay, Cassandra, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah. I want to kiss another topic that we promised to bring today, this notion of this concerns the local media. Lisa Benson of Channel 41, that's KSHB, is suing her station, alleging that she's been discriminated against because of her race. She alleges in her suit that her race is constantly used in deciding where or what topics she would be reporting. The suit alleges that she was consistently being sent to the urban core for all of her stories, and once was sent alone to the home of a KKK member. Any sense of this as a common issue in the news media these days, Pam?
Not that per se. I mean, I do think there's been a bad history of the news media relying on African-American journalists in particular to go cover subjects that editors felt they would have, a closer connection to. And so you read about Gerald Boyd, who was a managing editor of the New York Times, who said, and others who said, they were pigeonholed into covering topics that everybody should have covered and not able to cover topics that white reporters could cover.
So it worked both ways.
Yes.
They were sent into the city sometimes to report issues that might involve more African Americans, and then they couldn't cover stories that other reporters were being allowed to cover.
Exactly. And, my feeling is that race should never be the primary element of why or how an editor sends a reporter to cover a story. That said, there are reporters of color who may have better sources and a natural connection or interest to stories that are race or ethnicity related. And, so what we ought to do in journalism organizations is send people who can get the story and get it well and are going to be able to explain it to the public effectively.
Peggy, how do you regard all this?
I think, major journalism has probably done about the same kind of job on diversity as the rest of companies across the country, which is to say not very well.
Yeah.
But I would also suggest, I know nothing about the case that you pointed out. I agree. I don't think race should be the concerning factor when an editor makes a decision on who to send. That said, when a person of a minority group starts covering certain things, they do have certain insights. And this came up again. I was watching that When We Rise. It was on ABC, and it was about the gay and lesbian movement coming up out of San Francisco. And something happened, and someone said, "Call Randy Schultz." And they're referring, of course, to the San Francisco reporter who was the only person covering the AIDS crisis early on, who wrote the definitive book, And the Man Played On. So he was gay. So mm-hmm. He really had insight into that community, and he was one that recognized it as a story. So sometimes you do send your own into your own community. So.
I was just going to say, Derek, I mean, sometimes are gay reporters sometimes assigned to gay issues? Does it work that way too, as you've watched the newsrooms over the years?
I'm sure it happens in some organizations. And also, there's just kind of this question of where do those lines, where do they fall? you talk about, like, for example, reporters covering the financial industry. You know, the journalists are not bankers, right? But so
it's a far cry.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you create some sort of tit for tat that if you're going to cover this community, you've got to be a member of it, man, that is something that I don't think stands any professional scrutiny at all. Mm-hmm. And, like, especially talking about undereducated people, are you really saying that you have to find somebody, you know, who doesn't come from a educated background to do it? It doesn't make any logical sense. That being said, whether you've got additional sensitivities and, as you know, Pam said, can source up better, there's some advantages to reporting on something that you have some personal knowledge about.
So we're sort of saying this, it cuts both ways then.
Yes, absolutely.
There might be times when it does make sense to assign a reporter of color to cover a certain story because of contacts and affiliations and everything else.
And how comfortable the source is going to be talking to somebody. One of the primary things a journalist needs to do is to capture the trust of their source. And that, by the way, to take it back to Trump, that is something that I would love to see the mainstream try to do better, is to try to talk more directly to some really fanatical Trump supporters and try to get on the same level with them and understand. That's something I've really been trying to do, because we still need to talk the same language.
Okay, well, we've come to the end of another scintillating episode of The Media Critics here. I want to thank our very good panelists for a very good conversation. Pam Fine, Knight Chair for News, Leadership, and Community over at the University of Kansas. Peggy Lowe, Investigative Editor for Harvest Public Media based here at KCUR. And Derek Donovan, who now serves on the Kansas City Star's Editorial Board. Appreciate your conversation very much. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay. You can find us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. On Monday's show, Dr. Wes Crenshaw is in with advice for better communication between parents and their kids. The great Bobby Watson composed our theme music. We had help this week from Linda Scher, Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatakoro. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.